right? So if you're meeting a founder, you're trying to understand what actually the founder is going through in this cycle. It doesn't matter it's Series A or D or pre-IPO or IPO. It's just that you want to understand the pain points. Mm-hmm. And I think every company, all the unicorns or all the late stage companies who made it big in India have seen those cycles.
Yeah.
And we like to believe that we have been at the center of it in terms of trying to apprise founders that there is life beyond equity.
Yeah. Welcome to the Indian Silicon Valley podcast. I'm your host, Jivraj. And today I have me a very exciting guest. Join me in welcoming Ishpreet Singh Gandhi, the founder and managing partner at Stride Ventures and Stride One. Thank you so much, Ishpreet, for joining me. Very delighted to be hosting you.
Thank you, Jivraj. It's always a pleasure meeting you and having a candid discussion.
Always indeed. I think I've had the pleasure of knowing you since the first time I hosted you almost 1.5 years back. And it's been lovely to have these conversations off the record. I'm hoping we can pull one of those on the record as well today, considering that since I last hosted you, it's been a year and a year full of excitement, right? So much has happened. We've seen the high of the bull run and we're now seeing what many are calling the funding winter. There are many things happening, the bank collapsing in the US, so much chatter that people don't really understand or it's not fully spoken of. If I had to start you very early and understand what is your sense of the market right now? What are you seeing on ground? And from your understanding of leading, one of the largest venture debt funds in the country and so much more that's happening at Stride One, what are you seeing on ground?
Yeah, first of all, congratulations on the franchise of Indian Silicon Valley.
Thank you.
The podcast which you have done and the franchise which you have created is amazing.
Thank you.
Quite inspiring indeed. So, and it's been 1.5 years. So congratulations to you as well.
Thank you.
On the macro front, since you wanted to start there and understand what's happening, look, internationally or globally, we know that we had been almost for the past 5-6 quarters in a difficult zone for the startups here, especially in terms of talking about some bit of headwinds with what's happening at macro level, and especially in terms of the Western turmoil. And current scenarios of interest rates hike has resulted into a lot of deepening of so-called financial crisis across the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't help liquidity mm-hmm. in scenarios. So when you are there in the high interest rate cycles, and also trying to navigate inflation parallelly, the growth always takes a momentum which is not in the desired direction. It also leads into people not trying to be very, very creative about new thought products, right? So,
yeah.
So that's where we are actually. If you see what's happened with Indians with Silicon Valley Bank there in US, it has a ripple to a certain extent.
Yeah.
As of now, everybody's still trying to gauge what kind of effect it can create in the financial ecosystem, but everybody is very sure of the fact that that's not positive right now for the startup ecosystem in general.
Yeah.
And India is not excluded there, because whatever said and done, there are a lot of external capital which we raise in the startup ecosystem here as well.
Yeah.
And if the risk appetite over a period of time, plus the macro sentiments, it's not in a positive direction, we can argue about what kind of recession we are in. But that always hurts the sentiments in terms of unlisted or new age space as well.
Yeah.
So while I don't want to sound too bearish, I am in the startup ecosystem myself, but
yeah.
I like to believe next couple of quarters might be difficult.
Yeah.
Interesting to see about the unallocated allocations, how people see the new world as, how people see emerging economies like India, and what kind of possible positivity we can see over a period of time. Immediate thought process, there is a chance of a ripple
mm-hmm.
if Fed and other central banks really work in a positive trajectory in order to curtail that. There can be an outcome which can be sanguine to a certain extent. But next 2 quarters, I think it will be wait and watch.
Mm-hmm.
And post that, we'll have a better trajectory where we are going.
Right.
So from a liquidity scenario for startups particularly, except early stage, which has seen some kind of liquidity, we still remain a little bearish on the overall trend.
Got it. I think that's very helpful. Tells us about the ground reality. Next up, before we dive deeper, one of the interesting notes that we ended the last conversation on was building the Startup Bank of India, right? And looking at it not as a venture debt fund when it comes to Stride, but looking at it as a very full suit sort of thing,
yeah.
right? Talk to us about the different things that are happening, right? Because I'm not sure if everyone's fully aware of Stride One, of the multiple initiatives happening at Stride, and the speed at which you've grown. So, I mean, before we go deeper into some of these nuances, if you can give us a precursor to all sure. that's happening, and maybe the last 4-5 years that it's been, right, that'll be very helpful.
Great, absolutely. Look, as a franchise, naturally, we've grown well. If I like to believe 18 months back, whatever I would have told you, we've been walking the talk, the answer is reasonably yes. Mm-hmm. As Stride as a franchise, now, interestingly, you mentioned India Startup Bank because that's been a very clear thought when I started Stride.
Yeah.
If you see my prior journey, it was with banks,
yes.
building startups. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, I've been in startup ecosystem lending for a while now. It's been close to 8 years. And that experience I wanted to carry. But what one fact I realized was very, very, very clearly about the Indian ecosystem in general, since I've been very close to startup lending here, that you are generally working very lonely in this journey. I have a fundamental truth about that.
Yeah.
That you can do as many CXO level roles as founders. You need to have a very, very strong team as early as possible in your journey. But unfortunately, that's not true with most of the startups, right? Some of the other functions gets negated over a period of time. And unfortunately, finance is core to any startup growth, right? Whether you talk about navigating equity investors, whether you talk about navigating lenders, whether you talk about policies, structures, governance, there are a lot of things within finance. That's what I realized in my banking days. So I thought was very clear that Stride has to be synonymous towards a larger financial ecosystem, which is only for startups.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're sure of the fact that startup ecosystem in India will grow, and we are at third largest startup ecosystem, and you're the go-to financial institution, it's so much to do, right?
Yeah.
And I honestly, while Stride Ventures is one of the famous franchises on the venture debt, I always seen Stride as a franchise for startups creating products,
right.
creating whatever they want, rather than what we want to offer.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that, there's so much to do, right? There's so much to offer. So at Stride One, while it came in being a couple of years back, it's I think has become that kind of entity where any startup, early stage, mid stage, or late stage, they're talking to any kind of stakeholder. We have products for them.
Hmm.
So for Stride Ventures, while it's all on balance sheet, Stride One is all around the startups. So if you want to create a supply chain financing structure, we have it for you. If you want to create employee finance structure, we have it for you. If you want to understand, you know how to sell, but you don't know how to collect, we have a receivable solution for you. So the point is, just understand, have candid discussions with founder. And I think at Stride, we have various kind of entrepreneurs within Stride who want to just run passionately and understand and meet founders and just try to navigate the business model and say, okay, mm-hmm. these are the problems which we foresee. Can we create a structure for you? Can we create a solution for you?
Mm-hmm.
So I think startups should be like that. You should always have a solution for every startup. A consumer company will be different, a commerce company will be different, an agri-tech will be different, a SaaS will be different, an ed-tech would have a different requirement. And there are different stakeholders of every company, right? And if startup economy is, and we did a report on Stride One on startup economy as well, if startup ecosystem is big, the economy which is serving them is massive.
Yeah.
So Stride One is all about that economy.
Mm-hmm.
And creating products for the startups. And that's how, as an institution, we have come up. So by default, ventures become the go-to venture debt provider in terms of asking for any kind of debt. But we have so much to offer beyond Stride Ventures now with Stride One. So that franchise of Stride is growing in a trajectory that people have started considering as a partner than a lender.
Yeah.
Because lender has a perspective of collecting interest and closing the relationship. And since we carry equity rights in every company of ours in Stride Ventures, we always perceive this to be a partnership.
Yeah.
And I said, how can we partner you? How can we create more products? How can we ensure that we are actually a 2AM friend and being available in terms of crisis?
Mm.
And that's what has made Stride different.
Absolutely.
And I'm so proud of the fact that as Stride, if you talk about this in the startup ecosystem in India, people generally resonate that.
Yeah.
So I think that's how the franchise has grown.
Absolutely. You know, kudos to all that you're building and the entire team. I think that's a testament to what, purposeful building in venture can also mean. I want to understand the speed side and the, team building aspect of this journey. But before I get there, as a, founder of a venture debt fund, what it was at the start, how has your trajectory been when it comes to looking at it from a founder lens versus an investing lens, right? Because investors are usually seen as, I don't know, patient, long-term feedback cycles are long. But when you're building a venture firm from scratch, you have to have those building lenses as well, right? So how do you navigate both of these spectrums? Would love to know that.
Yeah, actually, sometimes I believe it's a very different journey we are carrying at Stride, because we are an investor, we are a lender, and we are an operator.
Yeah.
Right? So it's, you wear practical multiple hats, or turban in my case, yeah, in terms of ensuring that you have to see a company in all scope of lenses.
Yeah.
Right? So if you're meeting a founder, you're trying to understand what actually the founder is going through in this cycle. It doesn't matter it's Series A or D or pre-IPO or IPO. It's just that you want to understand the pain points.
Mm-hmm.
And I think every company, all the unicorns or all the late stage companies who made it big in India have seen those cycles.
Yeah.
You look at the companies whom you inspire about in the ecosystem, right? For Paytm, it was a demon moment. Yeah. For Zerodha, Nitin, who actually wanted to raise venture capital, he didn't get, and he thought that, okay, profitability is the way to go. Everybody had their zones,
yeah,
right? So interestingly, if the question is around the journey navigation, I think most importantly, as since we run an operating company, the understanding of what an investor should do, mm-hmm, is very different.
Yeah.
Leave alone what lender should do, because yeah, I've been a lender previously, right? So I think it's an intersection of being all three,
yeah,
which helps us understand what a company is going through and what they want.
Yeah.
And how to support them. If I have to wear a lender hat in terms of doing a transaction, I also have to understand the challenges which that lending can have an implication on the company, right, and how do you wear an investor or operator hat to understand that. So I think this gives us a very nice feed about the startup ecosystem. So if, yeah, you speak about, interestingly, at Stride, we are close to 200 people now.
Mm-hmm.
And if you see different departments or the investment team, their way of looking at industries is very different now.
Yeah.
Right? We are one of the largest investment team, just to understand that we know each and every sector. We know what is the right kind of gross margins, contribution margins that the business should carry in that sector, depending on what phase of the business they are in. And then you can peg in your mind where the companies are positioned, right?
Right.
And have an investment scope of lens when we look at an equity option.
Mm-hmm.
So interestingly, we've learned a lot. We analyzed close to 5,000 startups, mm-hmm, as a firm, because we cut across stages and sectors.
Yeah.
Being sector and stage agnostic gives you a lot of learning as a team. And within Stride, we have formed sectoral teams of 5-6, mm-hmm, where we are really concentrating, which deploys large part of our capital, where we know that there's a lot of working capital intensity. So I think the overall experience of joining all three has given us a very different flavor of looking at things. So whenever I have to look at as a lender, I'll only strictly lock myself in that transaction, looking at, okay, this is only supposed, yeah, to be an interest-bearing transaction, so I have to just think like a lender. In other cases, we have to co-create products.
Mm.
So I have to think like an operator,
yeah,
that how you have to navigate this. So luckily, that gives us a very different dimension.
Yeah. I can imagine. It seems like a very interesting design challenge, and just to listen about it is very fascinating. To manage it might be another different hill of a task already. But talking about the speed of just building, right? So maybe coming to the employees part of it, just spoke that 200 people at Stride. How has a CEO almost, right, if I had to put you in that position, how have you talked about or thought about building a team? And since this has grown so fast and getting investors and having them, you know, pulled into the system is usually seen as a more difficult of a challenge than maybe coming on board and operating. What has been the challenge on the team building front?
Yeah, interestingly, we've been, I think, kind of quite lucky in terms of getting the right people. I always, mm-hmm, believe, while you can call it a CEO or a managing partner or a founder, the point is it's always a team game.
Yeah.
You ask top companies who build a brand, you can't do it yourself. It has to be right leaders, right time.
Absolutely.
We can talk about serendipity in business, but serendipity in the team is equally important. I also think that as the leader of the business, you have to have great people skill set.
Yeah.
And if you want to hire good talent and want to retain them and motivate them, people management has been most underserved or overlooked segment.
Yeah.
I think since you mentioned about that, the most important thing is to get right people, right? So for example, Stride One has 7 CXOs who run their respective businesses.
Yeah.
Right? So as a founder, they know what they have to do for their respective functions, including business, risk, credit, operations, right? And finance. And as a founder, managing partner of Stride Ventures, we know what fund business, what deliverables we have towards our investors, right? And since you're responsible for each and every investor, you have to ensure that there are adequate returns and they're right kind of deals, and you have to get your money out if that is stuck somewhere. So I think having right people, and that's why we believe that there has to be a number of people in this kind of institution, what you're trying to create, to navigate those scenarios is very, very important. Mm-hmm. But most interesting thing is, since we are only startup focused, we don't do anything else. Yeah. It's very difficult to bifurcate time, right? So if I am, as a founder, speaking to another fellow founder of any startup, just understanding what's the requirement, and then we create solutions, as I told you, right? So the point is, you should then have those kind of thought leaders who knows how to execute those kind of companies.
Right.
So building an organization has always been about that. We have done that organically, we've done it inorganically. We've acquired a few companies in Stride One to get the right kind of talent, which is important for the business. But on the fund business, which has been core to our success, it's been having multiple partners, multiple directors with ownership structures, and ensuring they're motivated to go in the right trajectory.
Got it. Super helpful. Taking another direction to the conversation, perhaps, when the macro is impacted, right, a lot of people talk about the trade-off in equity or debt, right? Because maybe equity valuations have gone down, so dilution becomes harder, all of that. So is there an opinion of whether or not debt is preferable in a bearish cycle? Because interest rates will also go up, right? How do you, as a startup founder, understand and make some of these trade-offs when it comes to the fundraising cycle in itself?
No, good question. Look, interestingly, Stride as an institution does close to 400, 500 crores of monthly business. So give or take $60 million. And that to today's time, when you talk about bearish cycle.
Yeah.
So that means that there is definitely credit requirement.
Right.
So one thing is inherently the ecosystem requires it. Because if you see the multiple of how much venture capital flows, which has not been too much recently, but overall how it flows, there is an inherent requirement to top it up with debt. But if you see creating structures, right, for example, working with an agritech company to create a supply chain financing for their backward integration farmers and front-end customers who buys from them, that financing is enabled financing, which is not counted. Right? So the requirement is huge. It's a combination of realized and unrealized. Unrealized is something which we focus on Stride One, right? Which helps you ensure that people understand, founders understand credit, they understand finance, and tell them to get right controls in place as early as possible, create a corporate credit track. Because if you're planning to build it a 10,000 crore business, you need to get it as early as possible, right? So it's a combination of realized and unrealized. And as per me, It's a massive demand out there. Do you want to quantify? Quantify from a perspective that we are on venture debt fund business, the overall market is still not $1 billion. We're scratching close to $1 billion. And it can easily be a $5 billion in next 3 to 5 years period.
Got it.
On the unrealized segment of financing, if $25-30 billion of venture capital money comes in a given year, all of that money gets channelized in the startup ecosystem in terms of either you build headcounts, when people say burn money, or you're investing in technology, typical technology people or assets or working capital. If you create that unrealized met of financing, now imagine that $25, $30 billion is getting deployed and you're trying to finance each and every portion of that. So it's massive. How do you make the realized plus unrealized is the deployment? I would not get surprised if you cross 1,000 crore per month in this calendar year, kind of a mark across franchise. Only thing which you have to be very, very careful, because you are around startup ecosystem and the equity flow is not as regular as what it was. So how do you ensure that you're trying to underwrite them well? Right. So underwriting becomes very critical. You have to ensure that these companies are surviving, or at least if you've created an ecosystem around them, if they are dependent on them, these companies survive.
Right.
These companies do not survive, the credit is not coming back.
Yeah.
So from a credit perspective, there's massive demand to fulfill. And I think, yeah, that's where we're concentrating largely.
Got it. Fair enough, that helps. Another question on the macro bit, right? Or maybe just observationally, as somebody who's worked on the venture side, on the debt side with so many companies, I'm guessing 100 odd companies and more, maybe across stages, these are so many unicorns and so many different companies. What has been some of your most important learnings just from these founders, right? When it comes to just managing financials or just being very careful about their trajectory of profitability, because this has now become the in word, right? Everybody's talking about profitability. But as somebody who's been in the lending business, who's seen receivable cycles, what have you realized founders who are very careful about their books really do?
Yeah, so naturally hearing or talking about profitability is music to ears for lenders as well.
Yeah.
But we know it's very difficult to do it overnight.
Yeah.
You can't switch on and switch off.
Right.
The only thing you can do is to create separate file that if I get, or a separate model, financial model, that if I get 200 crores of cash, this is what my projections look like. If I do not get, this is what it looks like, a toned down version.
Right.
Because the money is not coming in the business to grow. But from a financial prudence perspective of founders, I've seen a massive change.
Okay.
And we like to believe that we've been at the center of it in terms of trying to apprise founders that there is life beyond equity.
Yeah.
Because look, typically in a bullish market, you're trying to always chase equity, which
right.
was the case in 21,
mm-hmm.
while we were deploying, but that deployment had a significance on the top of equity more. People said, look, let me keep on raising if it's coming, and that's a fair call.
Mm-hmm.
But in the bearish market, people have time to understand how can I extend this cash? What are the ways in terms of ensuring that I become more relevant for my partners.
Hmm.
Right. There is an inherent fintech component in each and every sector.
Correct.
If you see, every company has that fintech layer associated somewhere, right?
Yeah.
Lending gives them the multiple sometime in terms of the growth. So the good thing is there's a tremendous mind space shift. Because earlier when we used to say Stride and venture debt, there used to be, oh, I'm not raising equity, how will I be able to raise venture debt? Any which ways, when we came in the industry, we said we'll come in between equity rounds if required to support companies. And we have done that.
Mm-hmm.
We've done a lot of transactions where we come in between equity rounds because our core thesis at Stride is to underwrite companies.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, if you start telling them, oh, there is an innovative way of engaging with your partners.
Mm-hmm.
And if you provide them finance, nothing like it.
Yeah.
Right? Whether you provide early, late, create structures around that. Right? So I think there's a lot of education which has gone in.
Yeah.
Same question 18 months back would have had a different answer, that there's lack of awareness. I think awareness has risen.
Yeah.
That's why the deployments have risen. But still a long way to go. But
yeah.
I've seen the trends, right, Jivraj? There are a lot of early stage companies who understand this to a large extent, or when they come, they're a little prepared about what does this mean,
mm-hmm.
which was not the case earlier.
Right.
I've seen some seasoned founders coming from the in the startup space in today's time, who've seen the successes of some of the peers or other companies, and they're typically our industry guys, so they know how it works.
They know.
So it's helping the overall ecosystem and venture
yeah.
capital funds, yeah.
Absolutely.
Our partners, I think they have been educating a lot.
Yeah.
They have been saying, like, I think we have some of the amazing brand ambassadors for Stride in this ecosystem and have just gone ahead and said, look, speak to Stride, they'll create something for you. So
yeah.
I think that kind of awareness has really helped.
Absolutely. I can only imagine. I think everybody's talking about it. Markets, of course, have also changed, but so much of it is market creation, which has now happened and it continues to grow. As somebody who's seen multiple cycles, right, double-clicking on that fact, what do you think is an ideal combination when it comes to making these trade-offs, right? It seems fancy to maybe hear the phrase that it's not equity or debt, it's equity and debt. But what does that really mean? If you were to talk to a founder and paint an ideal scenario of this being the ratio or just the combination of debt and equity that one should work with, how would you paint it for like a company that has 5 years more, right? Like just hypothetically trying to understand the ideal combination.
No, I got that. So look, let's take examples, right? Just
sure.
to correlate.
Absolutely.
Take consumer companies. Right? We have funded numerous consumer companies,
mm-hmm.
if you've seen our portfolio. Now, if a company is generating a certain delta of growth
mm-hmm.
and they there used to be in time in 21 when people used to say D2C, and that's the only way to grow. Now people say omni-channel, offline. Hame offline bhi build karna hai.
Yeah.
Right. So online and offline, there is, agar aap consumer company ho, you'll buy inventory, you'll get a contract manufacturer. Contract manufacturers sab inventory banaoge. You'll buy it, and then you'll sell it in the offline or online marketplace.
Correct.
Now, in the offline world, the reality is it takes time. If you're a great consumer brand, it moves fast. If you're still establishing yourself, it'll take time for the inventory to move. Now, what you'll do in a typical scenario? You'll raise first round of capital, you'll raise second round of capital. Most of your money, because your typical gross margins are what? 60-70% for consumer companies? Mm. Most of your equity money is getting locked in there.
Correct.
Right? Up.
Yeah, yeah.
If you raise 100 rupees, you say, okay, I want to have a higher turnover. For higher turnover, I have to push more inventory, do more sales. And a lot of it is not getting realized, or a lot of it is in inventory, or you have to pay advances. Mm-hmm. So money is, a lot of consumer companies are working capital, or the equity is getting stuck there.
Mm-hmm.
Unlock it, right? This can be financed. This layer can be financed.
Mm-hmm.
Use your equity for marketing, right? Mm-hmm. You want to do digital marketing, you want to have performance marketing spends, use it for that, build a team. Mm-hmm. That's your equity, and all this can be financed. And if you're a 60% gross margin company, this might be financed at what, 15, 16?
Yeah.
Right? So the point is that inherently is a value creation.
Yeah.
And if you do 5 crore revenue a month, and if you finance large portion of it, this, whatever you save from equity, will help you unlock your own capital. Because if you're 5 crore revenue a month and you've got 70-80% of your sales financed, when you do 10 crores of month through that debt and then raise capital, your multiple will change.
Yeah.
Your valuation will change, right? So using that, and we have done it for several companies, acquisition included. We have funded acquisitions where the company's revenue have significantly changed in 12, 18 months. Mm-hmm. And they've raised equity rounds after doing acquisition.
Right.
Because if you're a 100 crore ARR company or 200 crore ARR company, your multiple change.
Correct.
Right. One is multiple change. Second, hence, even if the multiple remains same, because your revenues have changed, by default, your valuations will change, right?
Correct.
So even if you be at the static multiple. So the point is that all of this has started getting realized. And I've just given consumer example.
Yeah.
SaaS may...
It'll be different.
SaaS will be different, right? If you're a global or domestic SaaS companies, typically there is a payment cycle of corporates which takes time. All of that can be discounted upfront.
Correct.
And you rotate that capital.
Yeah.
And linger your equity round.
Mm-hmm.
Linger only when you think it's the right time, but all of the receivables, all of the payables, all of the inventory can be financed. Everything around you can be financed if you want. Right? And then there's a fintech layer on top of that. If you want to build that fintech layer, we're happy to partner you.
Yeah.
So I think consumer and anything which B2B businesses have the same problem, agri-tech, logistics, you name the sector, right? All of them have inherent working capital growth, which is getting fueled by equity. All of that can be replaced.
Yeah, fair. No, I think really clarifies. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think you save equity and you understand how you can build a more sustainable business, right? Instead of chasing those valuation numbers and valuation benchmarks. Awesome. I think that was super helpful with a real example. Maybe taking a step back and coming to this debt fund as a cycle, right? Because it's understood, I think, more fairly advanced in advanced ways how an equity fund works, which is to say there's a 2-3 year deployment cycle. It can take up to 10-15 years in this market because liquidation is a question. However, in debt funds, money rotates faster, right? And there is a repayment cycle, all of that. If you had to give a very one-on-one on how a debt fund really works, if you can maybe give us that education,
Sure. That'd
be very helpful, because I think I've not seen a lot of literature around it, so maybe hearing from the best on how that really works.
So, Jivraj, we are in our fund 3 journey.
Mm-hmm.
We've already deployed 2 funds in rotation of fund 2. Typically, an average cycle of a venture debt fund is around 4 years.
Okay.
Unlike equity funds, which can be 8 to 10 years. We typically like to do average tenor loans of 15-18 months. So that means within 4 years, you can rotate your capital at least once. So typically when you deploy your capital, you generate interest income plus equity upside. Equity upside are the warrants or CCPs which we hold in companies, which actually has a larger tenor than the tenor of the fund of 4 years. So in a very summarized manner, not to get it right for your audience, it's a four-year fund with average tenure of 15 months so that you rotate the capital and you return the fund post that. And during the time of those 4 years, you provide a regular income to your investors. So unlike equity funds, where typically you have to you invest for a longer tenure, and we can argue that there can be a lot of unlocking of wealth over a period of time or unlocking of value of some of the companies over a period of time. You return the funds after 8-10 years. In the meanwhile, it's all notional gains which you have. Some equity investors distribute after 1x, 2x. That's their strategy to do it. In our case, it's a regular income day one for an investor. So 75% of the returns, which is the interest income, goes day one in a quarterly form to investor for 4 years. And the options which we carry gets accumulated. And that works like an equity fund manager. So that has a longer tenure, and we'll patiently hold on it and see what's upside. So for us, two forms of return. And you go into multiple funds. So as I said, we are in fund three, which means fund one we have deployed and almost returned fully now, including those regular incomes. Naturally, we have not exercised all the equity options, which we'll keep on holding because some of the companies have done fantabulously well. And fund two, we've largely deployed the first cycle. So we'll be in the rotation capital, and fund three, we just started deploying. You within a couple of years, practically, there's another launch.
I think that really clarifies it. Interestingly, Ishpi, one thing that I'd love to know from you is that while you were saying, I felt that since you have an equity component and a debt component, and these two are fundamentally different investing thoughts, right? Which is to say that one requires underwriting cash flows, the other other requires underwriting a large outcome, growth mindset, possibly what the world can look like in 10, 15 years, right? How, as an investor, have you evaluated some of these things? And what is your mindset like when it comes to just evaluating companies? And maybe we restrict this to early stage so that, you know, for the parity of just mindset, because I'm guessing the later you go, equity also has to be more underwritten on company performance. But at the early stage, how do you underwrite a company from a debt mindset vis-a-vis a equity mindset? Would love to know that.
So primarily from a debt fund perspective, protecting principal and the regular income is the utmost priority. So whenever we analyze the company, that has to be basic tick. If that's a basic tick, then you understand if there are 10 ticks for 10 companies, which three of them are your equity winners. So interestingly, at Stride, we have not done a single company across fund two and now fund three which do not have equity warrants. So we do each and every company with equity upside. Not even a single company has been left out. So that means for us, all these companies inherently has a winning proposition. While they'll protect our capital and return with upside, that equity options really inflate our returns. So typically we've been at 21, 22% return. It can be, it can hit a 25% trajectory if the warrants equity options perform very well. The whole thought there is just like any other equity investor. But the good thing, Rajivraj, about doing cash flows, since you mentioned that, we sometimes really we know the nerves of the company. Because you're trying to analyze the cash flow, you're trying to understand their customer profile, you're trying to understand how much time they pay, what is the typical vendor profile and contract manufacturer profile, what how much dependency they have on them, and what is the how is the brand getting perceived is a very important part of our underwriting. So we do we also have some lot of tools to analyze that as an investment team. So one thought is like an equity investor to understand the brand recall, the founder, the product market fit, right? The storytelling. But the most important element to mix with that is the cash flows also. So I don't want to undermine that that risk element of ours, which is for principal protection, helping us for the equity upside. Because, and that's what we speak to venture capital investors as well, that since we are a more formidable large team and our mind space is that, we can be the nerves of the startup ecosystem because we can understand the cash flows. And that helps you have the predictability. And if the inherent margins are good, returns are less, brand recall is good. Again, taking example of consumer company, by default, they might outperform their peers. And that the propensity for an equity upside is more. So that's how you have to analyze each and every sector. We like to believe, if you've seen our portfolio, we have some of the top consumer companies, and we've really gone and convinced them to take venture debt as a structure with us from us from a perspective because we see them outperforming on equity than others. And it's happened with a lot of companies, Sugar, MyGlam, Bliska, Miko, Mensa. A lot of companies in our portfolio have really, we've come in early and they've really, really outperformed. And we've not sold a single share of those companies.
Got it. No, that's perfect. I think that very well clarifies it. Very, again, fascinatingly, as you were speaking, this popped up. Considering that you have this coverage across stages of companies, across different types of companies, how much of a focus is to maybe share knowledge across these learned lessons, right? Like across years, across stages, across companies. How do you transfer knowledge within the organization so that maybe what you were doing 3 years back isn't repeated now and you're always moving ahead? Is there a mechanism for that? Because this seems like a very interesting challenge to almost condense knowledge and bracket it in and not make those mistakes and like keep, you know, upping yourself. Is there a science to it?
Yeah, so there is a science and there is some bit of technology. And since we only take care of technology companies and startup ecosystem or tech ecosystem, we can't be away from technology.
Absolutely.
So if Stride might be one of the few funds which has a lot of technology on sourcing, analyzing transactions, disbursing transactions, monitoring them, and from an investor side, everything available under one window.
Right.
So you have every login possible, Teams navigation, and the whole focus is that this knowledge should be carried on. Mm. It should not be dependent on those individuals who are there in the firm. Right. How do you carry that legacy? Mm. So what we have done is all the startups which we've analyzed, we've started putting on technology, understanding various structures, various permutation, and deriving our own knowledge bank across sectors.
Yeah.
And so today, if you'll ask Ishpreet, if you've looked at fintech sector or fintech lending, what are the typical AUMs or ROA or ROE metrics of good fintech companies, right? Or what are the multiples which will excite an investor besides technology and origination? So we'll have answers that these are the metrics which has performed well for all these companies. Mm-hmm. Similarly, if you say, okay, Ishpreet, B2B sector, what are the typical gross margins and contribution margins at this growth rate, which has worked well for companies? We'll have that answer for you. Mm-hmm. So the point is that database is strong.
Exactly.
And we don't want to limit it to individuals. Mm. If you're creating an institution, it has to be legacy. It has to be technology driven.
Yeah.
And our investors should gain from that, right? Absolutely. Our investors or our venture capital partners. For venture capital partners, the proposition is that we are our eyes and ears because we know the startup ecosystem through that length and breadth.
Yeah.
So we can tell you if you're talking to us about our portfolio company, this is how they might stand in front of others as per us. From an investor perspective, we become the gatekeeper because we are practically investing in all the stages and sectors, and that intelligence can be given to them in order to for them to take judicious equity calls in these businesses. And for founders, you become a partner in their journey, right? So it has to be win-win for all. And that's how banks have loved it. They've invested in us. So you now can also open across sectors them to direct banks who've been our investors. So you play a very pivotal role in the ecosystem. And to your question specific answer, that knowledge is getting passed on specifically for 5-6 focus sectors. Mm-hmm. We do have data bank for everything, but 5-6 sectors is what we have zeroed on.
Yeah.
And say, okay, these are the sectors which we think will see a lot of volumes.
Yeah.
They're largely cycle agnostic. They're largely domestic consumption oriented. They largely have an orientation of becoming large companies inherently because of the sectors and the market they serve. And that's where the focus should be in the starting and do each and every company possible in that.
Got it. No, that's very interesting to know because it seems like, you know, all this intelligence ought to be captured and to make smarter decisions. And it's lovely how to know how it gets done. So great to understand that. You mentioned win-win for all, right? And that's another, I think I mentioned this in the last conversation as well, but I'll probably repeat to understand how you manage these different stakeholders, right? Because there are these banks, there are these family offices, there are venture investors on the equity side, then there are, you know, your own employees, your team. There are so many different stakeholders. How do you as the founder and managing director, managing partner, how do you navigate these different moving parts to ensure everybody is happy in their own stead and that everything is moving swiftly?
It's a very interesting question. Look, as I said, if I'm speaking to a founder, and I just want to understand that company and then create solutions.
Okay.
And you have four ecosystem partners to go to,
mm-hmm.
right? So till the time you become the epicenter of a confidence from them that this brand means this,
mm-hmm.
if Stride has recommended this means that for us, yeah. right? If that this and that is defined for the brand, I think it's quite a natural attraction from all the stakeholders.
Got it.
So we've seen multiple appreciation mails of equity investors where we have feeded transactions to them.
Mm-hmm.
And we have feeded on the basis of certain things which we have observed in the companies.
Right.
And that's been respected well.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, investors have doubled down on co-lending with us or co-investing with us,
right.
understanding our thesis. Banks have given loans to our companies because we have validated those companies. And founders get sticked from all ends because founders are trying to go to banks, founders are trying to go to the family offices, institutional investors, and you're trying to cover that as Stride. So as I said, it is practically creating win-win for all.
Mm-hmm.
You need to have those kind of relevant people in the organization who understands right. each and every element well
exactly.
and how it fits into our journey. So we maintain a constant dialogue with every stakeholder.
Got
and there are touch points. Hmm. There will be touch points for banks. There will be touch points for venture capital investors, institutional community, regular catch-ups, understanding what we are going through, what we are seeing in the ecosystem, what we're sensing on ground,
yeah.
because some of them might be global funds. And similarly for the family offices who invest in us, that this is how the markets are, and some of the co-lending opportunities might be very good too for you to invest with us if you want to invest, right? So, and for founders, it's again opening up of doors. So I think it's about navigating those relationships well.
Yeah.
So typically we have a framework to do that and people to do that.
Got it.
And whenever it requires some larger discussion to construct, every time happy to jump in. But people know that this is what we end up doing in a very structured manner.
Got it. Perfect. Awesome. I think I love that. We've covered a variety of things, right? But as we maybe look forward, there's a lot of stuff happening on the global front as well, right? And there are a lot of ambitions to not just restrict it to India, but going global. Anything that you want to share there as to how some of these initiatives map to what you're already doing and where can we see the future headed?
Sure. Look, I always believe that if you are in the third largest ecosystem in India, and you are a go-to player for the lending products.
Mm-hmm.
We are by far the largest on startup lending in India now. How do you create products for them internationally as well? Because that's been a requirement which has been coming to us. So I'm very clear on one thought. You don't do anything which just thinks that you're not concentrating on India.
Hmm.
You want to do everything but leave India, right, as a focus market.
Yeah.
So India is at core.
Of course.
But what we are doing is, since I've worked with global banks, they've respected what we have built. Some of them have invested in us in some form. So we are creating structures, synergies outside India for some of our portfolio companies in India. And if they want to, they're creating some subsidiaries outside. I like to believe Holdco, everyone want to keep in India now.
Yeah.
Right. But if you're creating some business expansion plans across geographies,
mm-hmm.
and creating a value add for those geographies, why not those investors investing in you?
Yeah.
Right. So we are working on something very interesting, which is only win-win as for Stride as a brand.
Yeah.
That if Indian companies are going global, and that's what inherently our government focus is, create for outside. Domestic consumption, create for outside, right? Yeah. Domestic consumption we solve with all our presence here. Creating for outside, fueling that in international structures is something which we've been doing or working upon now. And for that, we are taking our founders and trying to make them aware about some of the international structures which we are aware about or yeah. investors which we are aware about, and initiating a dialogue, initiating business discussions,
yeah.
and fueling that growth with some financing if required. So something which we just started working upon, but it's come on a good trajectory. And there are a lot of Indian startups who want to diversify in some manner.
Yeah.
So that's, I think next podcast might cover that in more greater detail. But yeah, I think there's some concrete plans there.
Got it. Lovely to know that. And I think it just goes to show that after every podcast, we have something to look forward to. So
yeah.
goes to show the high level of ambition. I want to come to that exact ambition point because I've had the opportunity to observe up close how ambitious and leadership driven you are. But as we conclude, maybe I want to focus on your persona as an investor, right? And maybe go more individualistic to understand how you think. One of the things that I often ask investors, and this is interesting on their persona, is how do founders define you? So if you had to answer that question as to what would your portfolio say about you, what would founders talking to you describe you as, I think that'll be very interesting to know.
Yeah, so I made a statement and I sincerely mean it. That I think there is a slight loneliness being a founder sometimes, because all the difficult scenarios, sometimes you believe you are the driving force and the entire team, firm, institution looks up to you. Yeah. So if you can be that actual friend of a founder and say, okay, and if not only you're there in need, but if you're able to stand up and really deliver when they ask, is what I want to be counted for as an institution. And I think that's where we think, or I think they want to define us or me, in terms of saying, okay, as you say, today in bearish market, there has been a requirement. How many companies we support today, navigate around, is what true friends are.
Yeah.
And typically it's against the philosophy of lending. Right. Yeah. So it's a little counterintuitive, but I think that's what one Stride stand for. Stride want to stand for relationship, being available, being a friend. And actually, whenever I look at any investment, any perspective, it's all about, can we work with those people for a while?
Yeah.
You can do anything, but you can't afford not to underwrite a founder. Right? I think that's something which we, and honestly, we've been in tough scenarios as a lender, and we've come out only to make sure that you navigate those scenarios well across the ecosystem, including founders founders trying to work with you in order for an outcome which is positive for you.
Yeah.
So I think that's something which you want to stand for: relationship, trust, and being available as a friend.
Got it.
I think that's how the franchise has also grown. You can't do it without them.
Yeah. Awesome. No, two friend to founders. That's a great way to put it. Let's maybe talk for a minute about that last part, right? Maybe if you can share more. The Go Mechanics situation is now out in the open, and Stride's role in it as well. Do you want to share how that experience was for you personally, and how did you navigate it? Maybe share what you can to understand that part of the situation.
Yeah, look, it was unfortunate, or it's been unfortunate what's happened there. But the true element was, there is naturally a brand which exists in India, which is a very, very monopolized business. Right? If you see true competitors of Go Mechanic as a brand, you don't find any, reasonably close, doing a consumer plus B2B. So it's unfortunate, the scheme of events which has happened there. What role we played there is, as I said, is a combination of being a lender plus navigating a tough scenario for the investors, for our investors, for the community at large, for the employees at Go Mechanic, and just supported the transaction in a manner in which there is a life in the company. Glad it has got its life back recently, but the whole thought was just being allowed of the fact that there's some businesses, and actually there are businesses made in real, and those reality businesses should get its own conclusion.
Yeah.
An Indian startup ecosystem in general should not get bogged down with that. So there was a franchise role, there was a startup ecosystem role, there was a lender role.
Yeah.
Every role was involved in this in order to make sure what kind of outcome you derive. Now, we could have acted tough, taken a tough stance, taken the company to just because we had the strong essence of the company, the brand, IP, et cetera, the charge on the assets. So we could have taken a very tough stance on going legal, IBC, et cetera, proceedings. We played the ball and understood that what is the real business all about? Without founders, what actually this business stands for.
Yeah.
And just navigated a true fit for them, which ensures there's a continuity of the business, continuity of employees, the existence of that brand.
Yeah.
And I think that ultimately, that's what, there can be tough scenarios, but how do you navigate that shows the mettle of an institution and individuals. I think team at Stride has done a fantastic job navigating that. And we've actually given a confidence back that companies can come back to life and they can survive these kind of scenarios as well.
Absolutely. No, that's very insightful to know how to navigate the tough situations which exist, right? Like, this is one of those which got a lot of public notoriety, but there are many that exist behind the scenes. But it's lovely to know what the end outcome became, and hopefully positive for everyone at the end of it. Great. I think the other bit that I would love to know is, when we see from afar you building, you know, one of India's largest venture institutions, how do you individually behind the scenes perhaps upskill yourself, right? Like, in very plain terms, because this seems like a challenge of a lot of scale. Yeah. And with you at the center of this driving everything that's happening, what keeps you, you know, becoming the best version of yourself? So if you can share anything on that front, I think it'll be very interesting to hear from a young, ambitious standpoint, because everybody looking at you will wonder how this happens. So if you can share something on the personal side there, that'd be helpful.
Yeah, in fact, when I came into this room, I was smiling because I 99% times feel confident about what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy my work.
Yeah,
I enjoy doing this dialogue about startup ecosystem. I enjoy meeting a founder. We have chatted offline. I enjoy those discussions. So I think it's all about enjoying the moment, and you love what you do. Hmm. And when you do that, I don't think they're working hours.
Yeah.
They're definitely no working hours. And I think one thing which we look at Stride, people coming to Stride and joining us, is how much you enjoy being with startup founders. Hmm. Do you like different businesses?
Yeah.
Do you want to be in scheme of things, understand how they're building businesses? Can you play a role in terms of determining that outcome of that business in some manner?
Right.
So I think that keeps me going. Mm-hmm. And actually, it's a very responsible position to be in, because since you mentioned about upskilling, large part of upskilling comes from the fellow founders who tell you about the sectors and what they're doing. When you make that large an institution or the trajectory which we have taken for ourselves, you need to upskill yourself in terms of what's happening globally as well.
Absolutely.
I think that's where you have to really stand tall, and sometimes the entire organization, venture capital community, is looking up to you, and you need to understand right dynamics, right talking points, right awareness about scheme of things.
Yeah.
In order to communicate that what this financial ecosystem can be for startups.
Yeah.
So that standing tall means upskilling constantly, whether it's through founders or through being subscribed to some of the greatest leaders in terms of what they have built.
Yeah.
And always learning that ways. And I think we're just a 4-year-old brand, and I think there's miles to go in terms of just keep on building on the learning phase.
Got it. I can only imagine. If we can, for a minute, double-click on that, right? From a more tactical lens, is there something that you, maybe routines, maybe productivity hacks, anything that you do on a very strategic level to make sure that on a year-on-year lens, right, you are maybe 3x, 5x, because AUM is growing at considerable speeds. How do you as an individual continue to grow remains to be a very interesting challenge. And this is something I ask most founders on the show as well, right? Because companies grow from a couple of million dollars to $1 billion, right, in valuation. Similarly for you, from a couple million to thousands of millions now in AUM. How do you navigate that from a strategic lens, if anything, to share?
No, absolutely happy to. Look, first of all, I always believe you create your own benchmarks.
Yeah.
So it's unfortunate what Silicon Valley Bank went through, because I like to believe that what they did for the community at large was very good, right? And that's required, right? So the point is, first of all, there is, while you can have target setting in terms of what you're saying, 3x, 5x, 10x, 20x, there can be a number, right? But the point is, when you get up in the morning and we drive yourself or come to work or start doing work or interact with your people, you define your own benchmark, stating, guys, what we are doing, any which ways, it's very unique to India. India being the third largest, possibly can become second largest, possibly largest in some time. What does it mean for the world, right? If India is actually the largest startup ecosystem in Southeast Asia and Middle East, if you're the largest player in that, what does it mean?
No.
So, and where do you take it from? Here is your own benchmark. If you think there is some hack towards defining a certain number to it, I think it's very difficult to quantify.
Yeah.
But what I can definitely say is how you touch upon more and more startups.
Yeah.
Anyone who's starting up, till the time they're hitting 3-year profitability. We do not want to rest till the time we are addressing to each and every startup. And being that ecosystem, does this mean some valuation numbers, some revenue number? Honestly, never quantify that. Can you be the largest in the globe doing that? Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
When can you do that? Yeah, maybe 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
That's the aspiration.
Got it.
So as I said, unfortunately, my hacks are not towards giving a specific numbers.
Yeah.
But it's definitely breaking it down, right? Got you can't keep on coming and saying, okay, you want to be the world's largest, or you're doing that. It's very important that every day or every month, there's some defining targets.
Goals.
Or defining goals, which you're working towards. And everyone is clear about that.
Yeah.
So not that you're growing your AUMs in fund or NBFC or any other field, but also, are you doing it with purpose? Are you doing it with technology? Are you doing it for long lasting?
Yeah.
So as to make sure, and are you learning in order to improvise?
Yeah.
Right? So that learning curve is important. And by default, I think we're beating ourselves every day in terms of what we've been thinking. So yeah, being at it with the right people is the hack.
And
just keep on continuously hiring the right talent to fit in.
Yeah,
I think that's one thing which I think we can do better. Mm-hmm. While we've really grown, more talent, more apt talent is the key to growing it further in the right direction.
Got it. Perfect. No, that's lovely to know and goes to show the level of ambition that you personally have. And that's something I want to come to. For the second last bit of, you know, before we end, I think I've had the distinct pleasure of knowing you personally and very grateful. I want to maybe take this opportunity to also mention that grateful to have you as a close mentor that I can consider in my life. But I've always observed you to be super ambitious, very driven in terms of leadership, walking the talk and just talking very, very ambitious, not just talking it, just like, you know, achieving every bit of it. What are some other value systems that define you as an individual, right? And what drives you to do the work that you do? If you can maybe condense some of those traits, I think that would be really lovely to know.
Yeah. No, actually, it's a very good question. And sometimes you just have to introspect on certain questions.
Yeah.
And certain things are natural. Jivraj, I'm a very, very people-driven relationship person. If people, if you speak to me about my investors, founders, you'll get this kind of adjective of being very oriented towards that. Mm-hmm. So I still am in touch with the first person who's given the first check to Stride as on the fund side, because it was a big call to start the fund that point of time.
Yeah.
And being in touch with them, being thankful about what they did in order to back you early.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the fact is, ultimately, you're carrying responsibility, and with trust, with money, there's responsibility attached.
Yeah.
How do you give it back that your investors always think that the money is protected? Yeah. Right. So you carry, by default, some of the functions in this trade.
Mm-hmm.
You carry integrity, you carry relationship, you have to be humble, right? You can't, moment you become arrogant, some of these early investors or some of the people who are small investors, you would not treat as important. Similarly, some of these startups, small startups, would quantify large startups in front of them. So some of the traits, I think, are quite natural to us at Stride, because deliberately, since I've handpicked each and every person at Stride, at least at important positions, it's very important that they carry that trait.
Mm-hmm.
Moment I see some bit of arrogancy or some bit of that we've cracked it, or we know it better than you,
mm-hmm.
or you're not worth our time, etc. I think it just deflates the proposition of Stride.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those qualities have worked well. Also being ambitious at core, since you mentioned that, while maintaining this, is again counterintuitive.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you want to give time to all the stakeholders, you want to be closer to them, and being available for all kind of things, you have to balance it well. So I think the whole thought has been to bifurcate your time in a manner in which you're justifying each and every second or minute of your discussions and treated it valuable. I think most of the things which people do not realize is how to break up time. If you're at work, what are the right ways to break?
Yeah.
I'm not saying I might have cracked it, but I think there's a very defining purpose of ensuring that you make your presence felt.
Yeah.
That line of making your presence felt
and
living the moment, whether you're speaking to a founder or an investor, and giving that assurance is very important.
Absolutely.
I think most of the founders, since we have now, you mentioned, we have close to 140 companies, most of the founders sometimes miss that trick. And that's where the relationship of being an investor and a founder become more of a teacher-student relationship. If you are candid, if that thing is very clear that you're giving your 100% with full ambition, at the same time going back on the relationship as a friend and communicating well, those relationships in founder-investor works best.
Yeah.
I think that fear, and that fear comes in when either you have some kind of guilt or you're not confident about yourself. Good founders, average founders, you just bifurcate amongst that. So I think some of these elements have worked well. That's quite natural to me as a person. And some of them, maybe I've acquired it over a period of time.
Got it. I think that's lovely to know. And, you know, summarizes a bunch of things that you've ended up mentioning and what really displays through your words. So great to understand that. I think for the last question, and I'm probably be a bit stereotypical here, considering that we've covered a variety of subjects, what are some challenges that you've had to navigate? And, you know, just putting things into perspective, if you had to go back maybe on the first day of starting Stride when you were, you know, leaving your corporate career of working in banks for a considerable amount of time, what would you do differently if you could go back on that first day if you had to?
Actually, I don't want to change anything, to be honest. God's been kind. Maybe I think the element of having the right team. While I think we've not been late, but getting that as early as possible, convincing the people whom you want to work with.
Yeah.
Getting that right, because look, you're always improvising. We are not a very old franchise, but you're always improvising.
Right.
What I think possibly what we can do well, or what we could have done better, is to make sure that we take ecosystem along, right? That high empowering education about what it means. I still believe venture debt is regarded as sometimes as inferior to equity in a positioning of scheme of things for a lot of founders. That mindset change, which has come more in the last, say, 3 to 6 quarters, could have been done differently from day zero with a different team.
Absolutely.
Naturally, some of the rock stars which we have, Abhinav, Apurva, Sami, there are a lot of rock stars which we have in the team. But having them more in terms of ensuring that the education could have been done earlier, right? Could have been accelerated, but no complaints on hindsight, to be honest. I think we've done reasonably well there. I also like to believe that overall, there's some general perspectives what people carry about startup ecosystem, which sometimes is demeaning to a certain extent, right? So there are perspectives about building revenues without purpose, right? And having a metrics for evaluation. I think good companies and average companies have defined it there. But honestly, in terms of changing anything since starting, I'm not able to recall something offhand. I don't want to change anything.
Fair.
I'm not able to recall, actually.
Sure. No, I think that's fair.
Actually, I don't want to change anything if that's the answer I can give you.
No, that's sublime. I think if it's been that good, then why change anything?
Yeah.
But that brings us to a great, great close. Thank you so much, Ishpreet, for being your candid self. I think this has been so refreshing. We ended up covering a bunch of things now that I think about it, from understanding things about the macro environment to the debt business to how the fund has worked, how you shaped the institution that you are building, and about your personal traits. Thank you so much for being on the show again. It's always such a pleasure talking to you. And this was another one of those amazing conversations.
No, thanks, Devraj. You always make me introspect a lot of things. I will carry some questions behind and try to answer myself over a period of time. So it's always interesting and intriguing. Thank you for having me. I hope I've done some justice to the conversation which you wanted me to come
up with. Absolutely. Thank you so much for being on again.
Thanks.
Cheers.